So let's talk about what it means. Craig, what are your thoughts about it? Is this an alternative that you bring up to your patients?
So in 2012 at Lugano, Jeremy Abramson presented the BV-AVD data in early stage Hodgkin lymphoma where there was a toxic death from neutropenic fever. That's when the mandate happened as far as giving growth factors, but the Echelon study was well on its way. So I think your question about comparing breast cancer data to Hodgkin lymphoma data is an interesting one. In lymphoma, what we try to do is not necessarily give all the patients the same treatment. So to me, what I have to figure out is which patient population is good enough to get ABVD, whether a PET-adapted approach, and which patient population do I think that that strategy is going to be unfavorable. So right now what I do, and we have excellent quality PET imaging at most academic centers in the country, is that I discuss the option of PET adaptive therapy and BV-AVD to the patient. However, for patients who, number one, have unfavorable disease, number two, patients who are elderly, number three, patients who have possible lung dysfunction, I steer them towards BV-AVD. For patients who are regular Hodgkin lymphoma patients, who I think will do well with PET-adapted approach, I will give a PET-adapted approach. So I'm subsetting patients right now into who I think should get BV-AVD and who I think we probably don't need to give that approach. Because remembering the salvageability, as I'm sure we'll discuss, is very high. So, you know, to give patients 12 cycles of brentuximab, and if that treatment fails, we've burned quite a bridge for the future. So I think it's very important to choose wisely in the beginning of what the strategy is. So I do not give all patients BV-AVD. I do it in a subset. And that's what this discussion.
Craig, what do you do with your PET-adapted approach in the patient who is, you know, not doing well after two cycles? Are you still using Escalade B-COP?
Yeah.
Okay. So, John, what's your non-protocol strategy?
Yeah, so I think looking at the study, it suggests that all of the patients that were in the study tended to see benefit. I think the issue relates to how one is going to have toxicity and potential toxicity influence what you're going to do. So I certainly agree with Craig in that, you know, patients that you're really concerned about giving bleomycin to, this is obviously a way to have to avoid any bleomycin exposure in your patient, and I think that makes sense. In the study, again, they excluded people with any baseline peripheral neuropathy, so those are patients that you're going to have to avoid this in general or be very cautious about how you dose the drug in the beginning as well. But I think the point that stood out to me is that in the broader patient population in this trial, even the low-risk patients appeared to have some benefit here. And so it's a deliverable regimen. Again, the toxicities are largely ones that hemocs are very familiar with. We know how to manage febrile neutropenia now that we understand that this regimen is associated with more risk. And I think in this setting, we can manage the acute toxicities fairly well, avoid potentially some of the late toxicities we still see with more intensive traditional chemotherapy regimens. And I would favor probably adopting this a little more broadly in the patients that you think can receive the drug.
So it sounds, John, like you kind of, again, buy into the concept that you're going to see some kind of risk reduction, a relative risk reduction across the border, you know, I guess theoretically, regardless of risk. But you have the factor of the fact that it wasn't response adapted. From that point of view, do you think response adapted approach is mainly avoiding toxicity or also improving outcomes?
Both, yeah. So I think the million-dollar question here is, again, you know, can one integrate this into a risk-adapted approach moving forward? That's a clinical trial question. But I think in practicality, again, in the real world, even patients that are getting this type of strategy, there'll be some generalization here. People will have a PET scan after two cycles of AVD brentuximab, and I think people will escalate patients that have abnormalities on their scan and are at high risk. That's not going to be as data-driven a recommendation as I think has happened, and that's something we'll have to follow very closely.
I want to ask the three of you any things you want to ask them about, Niraj?
I think from a community oncologist point of view, you know, over the years, we were more worried about the safety and toxicity of the ABVD. So, you know, all the efforts were trying to how we can minimize that. So from that standpoint, I think the febrile neutropenia, reversible peripheral neuropathy seems to be a little bit more, not that they're trivial, but easy to manage, rather than this unpredictability of bleomycin-induced permanent pulmonary toxicity. apart from the efficacy, benefit, how much is it significant, insignificant, from a community oncologist point of view, it looks like there is some safety and tolerability edge, especially when I'm talking to the patient and reviewing all the plus and minuses of the regimen. Personally feel like always kind of nervous about this bleomycin-induced permanent disability, quality of life issues. I guess we have to keep eyes and ear open and community to see what will be the eventual recommendation. But to me, that seems to be one of the benefit in day-to-day practice.